Part 2 Kitty Chapter 11 On the morning after Founder's Day, the weather took a marked turn for the worse. Drab grey clouds piled over London, and a thin rain began to fall. The streets quickly emptied of all but essential traffic, and members of the resistance, who would ordinarily have been abroad seeking out new targets, congregated at their base. Their meeting point was a small but well-stocked shop in the heart of Southwark. It sold paints and brushes and other such supplies, and was popular among artistically-minded commoners. A few hundred metres north, beyond a row of decrepit stores, the great Thames flowed. Beyond that was central London, where magicians thronged. But Southwark was relatively poor, filled with small-time industry and commerce, and magicians rarely set foot in it, which suited the inhabitants of the art shop very well. Kitty was standing behind the glass counter, sorting reams of paper by size and weight. On the counter to one side of her was a pile of parchment rolls, tied up with string, a small rack of scalpels, and six large glass jars, bristling with horsehair brushes. To the other side, rather too close for comfort, was Stanley's bottom. He was sitting cross-legged on the counter, head buried in the morning paper.
"They blame us, you know," he said.
"For what?" Kitty said. She knew quite well.
"For that nasty business up in town."
Stanley bent the paper in half and folded it neatly on his knee.
"And I quote, 'Following the Piccadilly outrage, Internal Affairs spokesman Mr. John Mandrake has advised all loyal citizens to be alert. The traitors responsible for the carnage are still at large in London. Suspicion has fallen on the same group that carried out a series of earlier attacks in Westminster, Chelsea and Shaftesbury Avenue.'
"'Shaftesbury Avenue.
Hey, that's us, Fred!'
Fred only grunted. He was sitting in a wicker chair between two easels, leaning back against the wall so that it teetered and wobbled on two legs. He had been in the same position for almost an hour, staring into space.
"'The so-called resistance is thought to be made up of disaffected youths,' Stanley went on. "'Highly dangerous, fanatical, and addicted to violence. Blimey, Fred, is it your mother writing this? They seem to know you so well.' They should not be approached. Please inform the night police, blah-de-blah. Mr. Mandrake will be organising new night-time patrols. Curfew after 9 p.m. for public safety. The usual story.
He tossed the paper down upon the counter.
Sickening, I call it. Our last job barely gets a mention. The Piccadilly thing's totally stolen our thunder. It's not good enough. We need to take action.
He looked across at Kitty, who was busily counting sheets of paper.
"'Don't you reckon, boss? We should load up with some of those goodies in the cellar. Pay a visit to Covent Garden or somewhere. Cause a proper stir.'
She raised her eyes, glowered at him under her brows.
"'No need, is there? Someone's done it for us.'
"'Someone, yes. Wonder who?'
He lifted the back of his cap, scratched with precision.
"'I blame the checks, me.'
He looked at her out of the corner of his eye. He was goading her again, rubbing up against her authority, testing for weaknesses. Kitty yawned. He'd have to try a bit harder than that.
"'Maybe,' she said lazily. "'Or it might be the Magyars, or the Americans, or 100 other groups. No shortage of contenders. Whoever it was, they hit a public place, and that isn't our way, as you well know.'
Stanley groaned.
"'You're not still sore about the carpet fire, are you? Boring!' We wouldn't have got a mention at all if it wasn't for that.
People were hurt, Stanley. Commoners.
Collaborators, more like. Running to save their master's rugs.
Why can't you just...
She subsided. The door had opened. A middle-aged woman, dark-haired with a lined face, entered the shop, shaking droplets off her umbrella.
Hello, Anne,
Kitty said.
Hello, all.
The newcomer glanced around, sensing the tension.
"'Nasty weather having an effect. Bit of an atmosphere here. What's wrong?'
"'Nothing. We're fine.'
Kitty attempted a relaxed smile. It wouldn't do to spread the dispute further.
"'How did you get on yesterday?' "'Oh, rich pickings,' Anne said.
She hung her umbrella on an easel and strolled to the counter, ruffling Fred's hair en route. She was dowdy of frame, a little rolling in her gait, but her eyes were quick and bright as a bird's.
"'Every magician ever spawned was out at the river last night, watching the sail past. "'Remarkable how few of them guarded their pockets.
She raised a hand and made a quick snatching motion with her fingers.
"Nicked a couple of jewels with strong auras. The chief will be interested. He can show them to Mr. Hopkins."
Stanley stirred.
"Got 'em here?"
he asked. Anne made a face.
"I stopped at the Mews on the way down and left them in the cellar. Think I'd bring them here? Go and make me a cup of tea, you stupid boy."
"It might be the last stuff we get for a while, though," Anne continued, as Stanley hopped down from the counter and disappeared into the back of the shop.
"That Piccadilly hit was sensational, whoever did it. Like lobbing a rock into a wasp's nest. Did you see the skies last night, swarming with demons?"
From his chair, Fred growled in agreement.
"Swarming," he said.
"It's that mandrake again," Kitty said. "The paper says." Anne nodded grimly.
"He's nothing if not persistent. Those fake kids."
"Hold it." Kitty nodded at the door. A thin, bearded man entered from the rain. He browsed a while among the pencils and notebooks. Kitty and Anne busied themselves about the shop, and even Fred exerted himself to some menial task. Finally, the man made his purchases and left. Kitty looked at Anne, who shook her head.
"He was okay."
"When's the chief coming back?"
Fred said, discarding the box he was carrying.
"Soon, I hope," Anne said. "He and Hopkins are researching something big."
"Good. We're just stewing here."
Stanley returned, bearing a tray of cups of tea. With him was a thick-set young man with tow-coloured hair, one arm supported by a sling. He grinned at Anne, patted Kitty on the back, and took a cup from the tray. Anne was frowning at the sling.
"How?"
she said simply.
"Got into a fight."
He took a swig of tea.
"Last night, at the meeting-house behind the Black Dog Pub. Commoners Action Group, so-called. I was trying to get them interested in some real positive action. They were scared, refused point-blank. I got a bit angry, told them what I thought of them. Bit of a scrap."
He made a face.
"It's nothing."
"You idiot, Nick," Kitty said. "You're hardly going to recruit anyone that way." He scowled.
"You should have heard them. They're terrified."
"Cowards!"
Stanley slurped loudly from his cup.
"Of what?"
Anne asked.
"You name it. Demons, magicians, spies, spheres, magic of any kind, police, reprisals. Useless."
"Well, it's no wonder," Kitty said. "They don't have our advantages, do they?"
Nick shook his head.
"Who knows? They won't take risks to find out. I dropped hints about the kinds of thing we did. Mentioned that carpet shop the other night, for instance. But they just went all quiet, drank their beers and refused to answer. There's no commitment anywhere."
He plonked his cup down angrily on the counter.
"We need the chief back," Fred said. "He'll tell us what to do."
Kitty's anger rose to the surface once more.
"No one wants to get involved in stuff like the carpet job. It's messy and dangerous, and above all, it affects commoners more than magicians. That's the point, Nick. We've got to show them we're doing more than just blowing stuff up. Show them we're leading them somewhere."
"Listen to her," Stanley crowed. "Kitty's getting soft."
"Look, you little creep."
Anne chinked the edge of her cup twice against the glass counter, so hard it cracked. She was looking towards the shop door. Slowly, without following her gaze, everyone dispersed around the room. Kitty went behind the counter, Nick returned to the back room, Fred picked up his box again. The shop door opened, and a young, thin man in a buttoned raincoat slipped round it. He removed his hood, revealing a shock of dark hair. With a slightly timid smile, he approached the counter, where Kitty was inspecting the receipts and the till.
"Morning," she said. "Can I help you?"
"Good morning, miss."
The man scratched his nose.
"I work for the Security Ministry. I wonder if I might ask you a couple of questions."
Kitty put the receipts down and rewarded him with her full attention.
"Fire away."
The smile broadened.
"Thank you. You may have read about some unpleasant incidents in the news recently. Explosions and other acts of terror, not far from here."
The newspaper was beside her on the counter.
"Yes," Kitty agreed. "I did. These wicked acts have injured many ordinary decent people, as well as damaged the property of our noble leaders," the man said. "It is imperative we find the perpetrators before they strike again."
Kitty nodded.
"Absolutely. We are asking honest citizens to look out for anything suspicious. Strangers in your area, odd activities, that sort of thing. Have you noticed anything untoward, miss?"
Kitty considered.
"It's tricky. There are always strangers around here. We're near the quays, of course.
Foreign sailors? Merchants? It's hard to keep track.
You haven't seen anything specific that you can bring to mind?
Kitty thought hard.
I'm afraid not.
The man's smile turned rueful.
Well, come to us if you do see anything. There are great rewards for informants.
I most certainly shall.
His eyes studied her face. He turned away. A moment later he had slipped out and was walking across the street to the next shop. Kitty noticed he had forgotten to pull his hood back over his head, despite the pouring rain. One by one the others emerged from aisles and recesses. Kitty gave Anne and Fred questioning looks. They were both white-faced and perspiring.
"I take it he wasn't a man," she said dryly.
Fred shook his head.
Anne said, "A thing with a beetle's head, all black, with red mouth-parts. Its feelers were right out, almost touching you. Ooh, how could you not tell?"
"That's not one of my talents," Kitty said shortly.
"They're closing in," Nick muttered.
His eyes were wide. He spoke almost to himself.
"We need to do something definite soon, or they'll get us. Just one mistake is all it'll take."
"Hopkins has a plan, I think," Anne tried to be reassuring. "He'll get us the breakthrough, you'll see."
"I hope so," Stanley said. He cursed. "I wish I could see like you, Anne."
She pursed her lips.
"It's not a pleasant gift. Now then, demon or no demon, I want to itemize the stuff I stole. Who wants to come to the cellar? I know it's wet, but it's only a couple of streets away."
She looked around.
"Red feelers."
Fred gave a shudder.
"You should have seen them. Covered with little brown hairs."
"That was too close," Stanley said. "If it had overheard us talking—"
"Just one mistake is all it'll take. Just one, and we'll be—"
"Oh, shut up, Nick!"
Kitty slammed the counter-hatch back and stomped off across the shop. She knew she was only feeling what they all felt—the claustrophobia of the hunted. On a day like this, with the rain drumming endlessly down, they were all reduced to loitering helplessly indoors, a state which exacerbated their permanent sense of fear and isolation. They were cut off from the rest of the teeming city, with wicked, clever powers set against them. This was no new sensation for Kitty. She'd never been clear of it, not once, for 3 long years. Not since the attack in the park, when her world turned upside down.